This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump says that Russia has to get out of Venezuela. Russian military personnel recently arrived there. Mr. Trump spoke to reporters at the White House Wednesday, standing next to one person, the wife of a Venezuelan opposition leader and self-declared interim President Juan Guaido. A piece, Tim McGuire.
The president was asked by a reporter if he's willing to back up his demand to Moscow with U.S. boots on the ground in Venezuela.
All options are open, yeah.
Trump adds that Moscow is well aware of the U.S. stance. He spoke to reporters on Wednesday in the Oval Office alongside Fabiana Rosales, the wife of Venezuelan opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido, recognized by the United States and dozens of other countries. Guaido in Venezuela on Wednesday called on supporters on Saturday to protest against nationwide power outages. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
The commander of U.S. forces in South Korea told a congressional panel Wednesday that North Korea continues to pose a nuclear threat to the United States and its allies. The commander of U.S. forces in South Korea told that congressional panel. General Robert Abrams said that Pyongyang's production of nuclear weapons, materials, and missiles are inconsistent with the pledge of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to denuclearize. Abrams told the House Armed Services Committee he could not comment on open session about commercial satellite photos seen to show increased North Korean activity at weapon sites throughout different areas of the country. Talking to a group of reporters, Prime Minister Imran Khan reportedly called for the formation of a neutral interim government in Afghanistan to help ongoing peace talks with insurgents. The Afghan government has since reacted by recalling its ambassador and summoned Pakistan's deputy ambassador to Afghanistan to lodge a formal protest. This is VOA News. Britain's parliament is set to vote on 8 options for Brexit as the new April 12th divorce deal deadline closes in. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma.
Speaker John Bercow has selected the 8 motions from 16 proposals submitted by lawmakers. The ones being considered include calls to leave the EU without a withdrawal deal, one to stay in the EU's customs union and single market, another to put any EU divorce deal to a public referendum, and there's an idea to cancel Brexit altogether if the prospect of a no-deal Brexit gets too close. The indicative votes are intended to reveal if any kind of Brexit plan can command a majority in Parliament. Further debate will take place on these themes on Monday. I'm Charles de la Desma.
A top lawmaker says that Attorney General William Barr is combing through Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe report to see what he can be making public. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham had dinner last night with Barr.
The Attorney General is going through the report now to take out grand jury information that can't be disclosed by law. He wants to make sure that there's nothing going to be released to the public or the Congress that would hurt classified information that hurt sources and methods.
Graham tells the AP Barr will also check with prosecutors who have cases stemming from the probe to make sure any release won't hurt their investigations.
Once that's done, he'll release the report to Congress and come and testify.
He's hoping that all happens next month. Sagar Magani at the White House.
The Department of Health and Human Services has ordered to rewrite Medicaid work rules in 2 states where a federal judge has blocked the new Trump administration requirement. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
In an effort to push the poor toward self-sufficiency, the Trump administration's encouraged work requirements for able-bodied people who get insurance through Medicaid expansion. Those requirements were adopted in Arkansas and Kentucky, but are now on hold because of a federal judge's ruling that the work requirement poses numerous obstacles to getting health care. He didn't rule on the claim by advocates that the work requirement shouldn't even be part of a health insurance system. About 12 million Americans are covered by Medicaid expansion, which is accepted by more than 30 states. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
And local authorities and international aid agencies struggling to deal with the massive destruction and displacement left behind by Cyclone Idai in Mozambique are now facing the crisis of cholera. Senior health officials have told reporters that 5 cases of the waterborne disease has been discovered so far. I'm Tommy McNeil, the VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, March the 28th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. The government of Burundi has released the three schoolgirls who were detained last week over accusations that they had scribbled or doodled in their textbooks over the photo of their country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza.
From the very beginning, we launched a hashtag, We Are Girls. The hashtag has been trending globally. It's been picked up globally. Human Rights Watch, on the other hand, also wrote about this and launched a campaign asking people, where people all over the world doodled over the photographs of the head of state and in an attempt to show the government that doodling is not a crime.
Katie Nidjabandi is a Burundian human rights activist currently living in exile in Canada. In the Second World Health Organization's Africa Health Forum kicked off this week in Cape Verde with a focus on how to provide universal health care to the people on the continent. And members of the opposition in Tanzania are accusing the government of President Magufuli and his ruling CCM party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, for using underhanded methods of repression against other opposition parties.
Just today, we were supposed to have an internal party meeting in one of the suburbs of Dar es Salaam, and the police invaded our meeting and disrupted it. And later, we went to the party headquarters, and police invaded the party headquarters and asked us to stop doing a constitutional meeting of the party.
That is Mr. Zito Kabwe, the head of Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo. We'll speak to him later on in the show. We are covering those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start off in Burundi, where the government has released three schoolgirls who were detained last week over accusations that they had scribbled or doodled in their textbooks over the photo of the country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza. The girls were arrested last week and transferred to a jail in Ngozi, about 50 kilometers from their school district. The news of their arrest caught the attention of the international community, many denouncing the rationale behind their arrest. A social media campaign, hashtagged Free Our Girls, trended on Twitter and other social media platforms, with thousands of people around the world calling for their release. And now that the girls have been released, many are now questioning whether the government of Burundi bowed to social media pressure or that they realized the absurdity of this whole situation. And one of the activists responsible for bringing this issue to the attention of the global social media community is Katie Nivyabandi. She's a human rights activist from Burundi, currently living in exile in Canada. Katie joins me on the line to talk about the human rights situation in her country. So, Katie, thank you very much for joining us. Can you give us a little context of why these girls were arrested in the first place? And is there a specific law that they broke or that prevents them from drawing in their textbooks?
Well, what we know is that the girls, so initially it was a group of seven school children, one boy and six girls, and they were arrested for doodling in their textbooks over the photographs of President Nkurunziza. So the seven children were arrested, and the four were released because they were under the age of incarceration, and they were under 15. And the three other remaining girls, 15, 16, and 17, were then charged with offense to the head of state. The full charge is a lengthy one, but it includes the fact that they are a threat to national security. And so they were then moved to a different jail, a different detention center, this time to a jail in Ngozi, which is at least 50 kilometers away from their hometown and their families. And that's the president's hometown.
Some people find it peculiar or strange that these kids were arrested for doodling in their textbooks. But like you said, I guess the question really is, why do academic textbooks in Burundi contain photos of the president? That sounds like some communist era type of education system. Can you tell us what's going on here?
So I have not seen the textbook myself, but indeed there are several questions that need to be asked about around this matter. Number one, indeed, why do we have textbooks which feature the president in it, and what kind of text are they, which are accompanying these photos? So this is quite problematic. Secondly, for these kids to be arrested, it means that their teachers, the school directors, the headmaster, headmistress, and several other people were involved and reported these kids to the police. So this also tells you a lot about the state of the climate that's in the country, and the fact that there's a great climate of fear and of, you know, almost spying and telling on each other to the authorities. And lastly, you have the fact that you have an entire the national police coming into a school to arrest school children for doodles. I mean, it doesn't get it any more absurd than this. But it tells you this is the state of Burundi today, and it reflects the dictatorship that really we are under, and the gravity of the situation, but also how broken our justice system is, and how human rights abuses are carried out by those who should be upholding the law.
So the girls were released. Do you think that the release, their release, had to do with the government bowing to international pressure, especially the social media campaign, or the government just realized the silliness of this whole situation?
It was absolutely the power of people power, and particularly the power of social media. From the very beginning, we launched a hashtag, Free Our Girls. The hashtag has been trending globally. It's been picked up globally. Human Rights Watch, on the other hand, also wrote about this and launched a campaign asking people, where people all over the world doodled over the photographs of the head of state, and in an attempt to show the government that doodling is not a crime. So you had a global outcry over this, and absolutely, I am very 100% sure that the government responded to the public oppression, the public humiliation that it was getting. I've just landed from Geneva, where I was at the Geneva Summit for Human Rights and Democracy, and I had asked also people to share the hashtag there, and there was a government representative in the room, and here you had people from all over the world using this and trending. I think it was very embarrassing for the government of Burundi to be seen in such a light, and this is the only reason why they released the girls.
So let me ask you this, aside from the social media campaign, what is, do you think, is the reason why the arrest of these girls captured the attention of the world, given that there are other numerous human rights abuses documented by organizations like Human Rights Watch and other international bodies like the UN, you know, regarding the poor human rights record of the government in Burundi? Why this issue, and what else should the world know about what is taking place in your country?
I think what captured the attention of the world is the absurdity of this act. You know, really, to jail children for doodling in their textbooks, it doesn't get any more absurd, any more ridiculous than this. And it doesn't, and it's the best illustration of how low this government has fallen. So I think the world over, just people couldn't conceive, people who live in democracies or semi-democratic states just couldn't conceive that a whole government would be able to put children in jail over this. But what the world needs to understand, and particularly our African brothers and sisters, is that this is just, it is one out of thousands and thousands and thousands of human rights abuses that the Burundians are undergoing today. And yes, there's the doodling, but there are so many people losing their lives.
Keti Nivjabandi is a human rights activist from Burundi. She's currently living in Canada, where she joined me on the phone. This is Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. A leading opposition figure in Tanzania is accusing the government of President Magufuli and his ruling party, the CCM, or Chama Chama Pinduzi, They're accusing the president and his party for using underhanded methods of repression against opposition parties. Mr. Zito Kabwe is the head of Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo. He says that some of the methods include harassment, arrests, and detention of prominent political figures. Earlier this year, the country's parliament passed a law that gave powers to a government-appointed registrar of political parties. That registrar has powers to deregister parties and to punish people that he finds guilty of engaging in what it calls unauthorized civic education. And such activities include, but are not limited to, holding meetings, voter registration drives, etc. And Mr. Zito's party recently received notice demanding for audited reports, a move that Mr. Zito says is a pretext to go after his political party, especially after a high-level defection of veteran politician Malim Seif Harim Ahmad from his former party, the Civic United Front, CUF, to join Mr. Zito's Alliance for Change and Transparency. Mr. Zito joins me on the phone from Dar es Salaam to talk about this situation.
What is happening is that 2 days ago, the government issued a notice on the intention to cancel registration of our party and gave two reasons. One is related to audits, and the other one is related to the actions of the so-called members of the party in various parts of the country who banned the flags of another political party. And both reasons, both grounds, are very, very flimsy. Because, one, the audit issue was settled 3 years ago. And the second one, on the banning of the flags of other parties, first of all, the law is very clear that if there is that banning, it has to be the people, the members who were involved are supposed to be punished and not the party that is supposed to be punished.
Okay. So given that the issue of audit, which I believe this is probably the bigger issue here, you're saying that it was settled 3 years ago. Why now? What prompted this move by...
That's the most important question. Why now? Why now? It is because a week ago, our party received the biggest boost ever because the leading politicians in the other side of the United Republic of Tanzania, the place called Zanzibar, joined our party en masse. And in a week, the party registered 125,000 members. Mm. So the state is worried. The state is shaking, and they are trying to threaten us in order to ensure that we do not build the momentum of the new members that we got from Zanzibar and some other parts of the United Republic of Tanzania.
Okay, so this is the ruling party seeing you gaining a lot of membership, a lot of traction. Yes. With this new member. I believe that name is Saif Sharif Ahmad, who just joined.
Sharif Ahmad.
A very influential.
Winning every single election in the Zanzibar archipelago, and every single election has been stolen, and the last election was cancelled.
So you believe that this is what prompted the government of Magufuli, President Magufuli, to come after your party?
I believe so, but also should not be seen in isolation. For the last 3 years, there has been a shrinking civic space and political space in the country. The political parties were banned to conduct their political activities. The leaders of the opposition, members of parliament, have been in jail. Myself, I've been arrested more than four times. And just recently, two members of parliament, one of them the leader of the opposition in parliament, spent more than 100 days in jail. So there has been this kind of suppression and oppression and shrinking political space in the country. So it has to be seen, not in isolation,
right,
but in news.
Right, to see a full picture of what is happening in Tanzania, where
yes,
analysts are saying that there's been a campaign of repression against opposition parties like yours.
Yes.
Do you know of any political parties that are being currently audited by this body?
No, all political parties are audited by the Auditor General every year. And so the issue of audit hasn't been an issue at all. It is not even an issue now. Mm. They just decided to use it in order to serve their purpose of threatening us. So all other political parties are being audited, and maybe end of this week, the Auditor General will issue his report on the audit, not only of the political parties, but also of other government agencies.
Okay, so since you're sure that you will pass the audit, then that won't be a problem.
The audit has been done. It was done 3 years ago, and we passed. We received a clean audit report.
And
so
that
there is no issue at all in the audit.
Okay.
Not at all.
And so this has been communicated with the relevant authorities.
And it was because it's a national audit office that audits the party.
Now,
and we communicated with the Office of Registrar of Political Parties and sent to him all the auditor reports. So there is no issue, but they are trying to find a way of deregistering the party because of the overwhelming support the party has received in the last few weeks.
Mr. Zitto Kabwe is the head of Tanzania's opposition party, Alliance for Change and Transparency, also known as ACT Wazalendo. Environmental activists say that as the global demand for products like wood, paper, and many other goods, as that demand continues to rise, people and companies are encroaching ever deeper into Africa's dwindling forests. From Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji brings us this report about conservationists in the country who say that both animals and forests continue to face human threat.
The sound of birds and chimpanzees welcome you as you enter Chivale Forest National Park of Western Uganda. The rainforest is home to a variety of flora and fauna. Big mammals such as elephants, buffaloes, antelopes, birds and reptiles live here. Godfrey Bariesima, the park's head warden, says the forest has 13 different primate species, some only found in Uganda.
We have black and white colobus. We have the gray-cheeked manga bee, Ugandan manga bee, because they found it very unique. And then we have lowest. A lowest monkey is a terrestrial monkey. It doesn't stay up in the trees, just on the ground. And it is also there. And we have a blue monkey, a velvet monkey, and the olive baboon.
But he says this park is commonly famous for the chimpanzees, which scientists claim have more than 97% of man's DNA. Guide Alex Tudiatunga says indeed, chimps behave like humans in a way.
So they can tell each call of their own. So they've had a friend. If it is an enemy group, there is a way they also become nervous. Sometimes they can go to attack or they just retreat.
But these animals face challenges mainly resulting from the human interference, such as poaching, says Lile Ajelova, the head of Ugandan Tourism Board. Besides poaching, many forests, home for the wildlife, have been cut, leaving animals with less space to live in and not enough food to feed on.
In Uganda, but I don't believe it is just in Uganda, but it's all over Africa. It's the biggest problem. Why? Because wildlife has lost a lot of their habitat, and there's a lot of interface between humans and wildlife right now. And it's the biggest challenge for wildlife conservation.
She says animals that face more threats are those outside protected areas like national parks and game reserves, as protection is usually left with local authorities who have less expertise and resources. At Vigodi Village, just about 4 kilometers from Chivale National Park, John Tinker has set a home in which he accommodates tourists, local and foreign.
Without wildlife, I wouldn't have this business here. It's because of wildlife that tourists come into this community, see chimps and the other primates in the forest, and then they need a place to stay. And some of them now are taking interest in staying in communities. And the money I get here is around 10 million Uganda shillings a month, and that helps me to run the family. In fact, I don't even manage it. It's managed by my wife and kids.
56-year-old Tinka was in fact born in what is now Chebal National Park, and his family used to survive mainly from hunting. Animals and plants that live in the world contribute to the ecological, genetic, social, economic, scientific, educational, cultural and recreational aspects of human being and sustainable development. Ajelova says people need to be informed of these benefits so they can help in protecting the wild.
Strategies like community tourism or ecotourism would be a better, you know, way of getting everybody to benefit socially, economically, and environmentally.
The government is also giving some incentives, like startup capital, for people living near national parks so they can keep watch of the wildlife. For VOA News, Ayamugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And we end this morning's show in Cape Verde, where the second World Health Organization's Health Forum kicked off this week. The focus is how to provide universal health care to people on the continent. The World Health Organization's Africa Acting Director for Health Systems and Services Cluster, Prosper Tumusime, spoke to Ricky Shryok about progress that has been made since the last conference, continued challenges, and more.
There has been quite a lot of movement. There has been, from the side of WHO that supports the countries, we've had a program called the UHC Flagship that works through sending out scoping missions to countries. And so far we've visited about 10 countries. What we do is that we go and sit down with the countries and the stakeholders, with the partners and government departments, and discuss their priorities for the health sector, and then agree on what out of those could be actually rolled out to improve the coverage for universal health.
As I understand it, at the conference, there's a innovation, a challenge exhibition. Have you gotten a chance to visit it? And if so, did you see anything that inspired you?
Yes, there's a universal challenge here. So there are some, for example, that use their technology for information, gathering information that is taken from clients and so on to aid the service delivery as they move on. There are quite a number of them. There are others which are on financing and the sort. So it's quite a good amount. And these are mainly youth, the young guys, the young people.
What are the main challenges to implementing universal health care in Africa? And Africa is a huge region, so I'm sure there are different challenges based on different spots.
No, that's correct. There are different challenges because the countries differ. There are different types of countries. We have countries that are in the federal state. We have countries that have a lot of fragile situations. We have small countries which are like island countries that have peculiar challenges with climate change and things like that. Then we do have, of course, also countries, for example, that are moving up from the lower income to the middle upper income countries, and they still have challenges of financing despite they have moved up a step higher as they get divorced from access to donor funding, for example. But one of the biggest challenges, I think, is galvanizing the government commitments.
And that's it for this Thursday, March the 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We want to thank you for spending this morning with us, and join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.